our weekly baseball podcast with me, Tim Benz, and Kevin Gorman, our Trib Live beat reporter who covers the Pittsburgh Pirates. Glad that you're with us. Getting set to take the Pirates into the weekend series. It's luau time, I know that, but hey, whatever excuse for a party we need after a three-game sweep of the San Diego Padres. Kev, I didn't see that one coming.
You know, certainly not with the Pirates having lost 12 or 13 entering that series. I don't think you saw it coming, although the Padres look like they're a team that's a bit in disarray right now, given that payroll, the star power they have, and the performance they're giving San Diego. So as much as this was a very fun team a couple years ago when they were Slam Diego, right now they look like a team that can't support its starting pitching, whether it's with their bullpen or with their bats.
So what was the story with the air quality delay? What were they talking about? Why did they decide to play?
Well, you know, it's interesting because before the game, a couple Pirates players, most notably Austin Hedges and Andrew McCutchen, complained to some people about the air quality. There were a lot of other people that just said, hey, you know, it's a little bit worse than it was, but it wasn't anything that really affected us. But I certainly think that, you know, when you get the Major League Baseball Players Association involved and you start, you know, asking yourself, are the health risks worth it? And I think probably more to the point, what are we getting out of this? You know, we're the ones taking the risks here. What are we getting out of this? Because they had to play a night game followed by a day game. And, you know, what we saw on Wednesday was that the air quality improved over the course of the day, you know, where it was very, very unhealthy early in the day. The air quality was considered in the code red, but not code purple. And today it was the quality was much, much worse early in the day. And I think the Pirates players, I think they collaborated with some of the Padres players and said, we need to do something about this. And so I think Major League Baseball got involved and essentially said, let's get this resolved before we start this game so that everybody's on the same page here. So, you know, maybe the players got something out of it. They may have gotten a perk involved or maybe some type of a payout. I don't really know, but certainly they raised the awareness to their concerns prior to the first pitch, which is why we saw that game delayed 45 minutes.
Was it a perk or was it Major League Baseball telling the Padres, hey, if this game matters at the end of the season, you're going to have to come back to Pittsburgh in September?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the vibe that we got from Mitch Keller was that they didn't want to have to play a doubleheader. You know, they didn't want to have a game that was postponed and rescheduled. The starting pitchers didn't want the rotation disrupted. They didn't want roster moves to have to be involved. So there's a lot of moving parts when you're talking about postponing a game, especially a game when the conditions, aside from the air quality, are otherwise playable. You know, it wasn't raining. It wasn't like, you know, that there was a storm passing through. It was just that there's, hey, it's smoky out there and you're going to taste it. And it's kind of like, you know, Mitch Keller said he woke up and said his throat was a little dry and scratchy, but he said that could have been from anything. But, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where you didn't just play a game of baseball. It's like you played a game of baseball while smoking a pack of Marlboro Reds.
Kevin Gorman with us. I think we all needed a pack of Marlboro Reds after this was over. 5-4, big comeback for the Pirates. Credit to the bullpen for keeping it close long enough for the bats to wake up in the seventh.
Yeah, the bullpen did a really good job, especially in a couple of really tough situations. You know, Ryan Borucki came in and with the bases loaded and got an out. And, you know, I thought David Bednar pulling the trigger. You know, we had talked about that one of the other podcasts, Tim, about whether Derek Shelton should go to Bednar in the eighth inning. And in this case, it was a four-out situation. But he said, hey, I wanted to go to my best guy because he was in a situation where he knew it's a one-run game. Let's get this taken care of and win this game. And David Bednar came through. And so did his defense. You know, that's the thing that was impressive was the play that Jared Triolo made in his second major league game, making a play like that to end the game. But you see them go up against, you know, Tatis and Soto and Machado, and that's how you have to end the game. And that's, you know, that should be like a murderer's row of players. And the Padres just didn't get anything going, and it was the Pirates rookies that did. And that's kind of a big storyline, too, is just how Henry Davis and Nick Gonzalez and Jared Triolo, essentially in their first week in the majors, you know, came through for the Pirates in a big way.
Yeah, Triolo had two hits along with the defensive play you're talking about. And then at the top of the order, boy, the top of the order was really good. Sawinski had an RBI and a hit. McCutchen was 2-for-4. Davis was 3-for-4. He doesn't look out of place at all at the plate, does he?
No, he doesn't. He looks like a guy who could be, staying in that top of the order somewhere. You know, I don't know exactly what they're going to do when Brian Reynolds comes back, whether you put Reynolds at two and leave Davis at three, maybe move Kutch to four and Santana to five. But it certainly gives the Pirates some options at a spot where, you know, as during that time when they were going through that losing streak, Brian Reynolds, when he was out, Andrew McCutchen stepped in and Ke'Bryan Hayes stepped in and filled that number two hole. But number three, the Pirates were getting absolutely no production until Henry Davis stepped into that spot and has done a very good job. And he doesn't look that out of place in right field. I mean, I think the Pirates are trying to protect him in the late innings and not put him in bad situations, but he's handled right field better than I would have imagined for a guy who's played such little part, you know, so little games there in his, professional career.
Kevin Gorman with us, beat writer, covers the Pittsburgh Pirates here at the Trib. All right, Kev, so they managed to get back on their feet against, like you said, and I agree, a San Diego Padres team that looks listless and lost despite all their talent and their payroll. And now they go back in division, which has been a tougher putt than it should be, at least last time through against the Cubs and Brewers. That was the bulk of their really bad losing streak that they had to endure. Now they get Milwaukee again at home before going on the road to play four against the Dodgers and a couple against Arizona. Then we get to the All-Star break. These three against Milwaukee are really important if they want to get back in the rails before they get to the midway point.
Yeah, and I think the other tough part about it is, you know, the Pirates have to kind of get through and continue having that good pitching. Whether it's a strong starter or having the bullpen come through, they could have some help on the way. Brian Reynolds should be ready to come off the injured list very soon, whether it's tomorrow or sometime this weekend. And then they could get some help in the bullpen. I think Colin Holderman also is eligible to come off the IL. So there you get a setup man for David Bednar and perhaps put Dari Moretta in a role where he's a sixth or seventh inning guy instead of the eighth inning guy. And that could be a big help too. So I think the Pirates realized on that road trip with Chicago, Milwaukee, just how much of an opportunity that they blew, that, you know, getting swept in those series and losing 12 out of 13, 10 in a row. They went from first place to fourth place. The interesting thing about it is, you know, I don't know where the standings are right this moment, but, they're still within reach of first place. They're still within contention of the division championship. And I think that's why you're seeing the Pirates being so aggressive with some of their transactions that they're making, moving some of the young guys up and giving them opportunities. And those guys have responded. It looks like this isn't a team that's holding its talent back, but maybe one, whether it's panic or whether it's just feeling like, hey, we're in contention, let's get our best players here. But, you know, they're making the moves that, you know, not just to quell the fan base, but also to give a jolt to a lineup that desperately needed it.
Kev, before we go, any new vibe that you're getting from the team regarding the whole LSU versus LSU debate when it comes to that top draft choice, Skeens versus Dylan Cruz?
I mean, you know, when I've talked to scouts, everybody says Dylan Cruz is the 1-1. Any other year, maybe Skeens would be that guy. And I've heard comps to, Steven Strasburg and even Gerrit Cole. And, you look at it and you say, okay, well, maybe they can't go wrong if they take one of the LSU guys. It's just a matter to me of strategy. Skeens looks like a pretty impressive talent, but you're also dealing with, when you're talking about pitchers going number one, the risk of Tommy John surgery. And you think about some of the guys the Pirates have drafted up there that have been busts. You know, Chris Benson was good, but not great. Brian Bullington was a bust. Daniel Moskis was number four, was a bust. Gerrit Cole was good on his way to great for the Pirates. And so the question is, if you're going to draft a pitcher, are you going to get his best years? Or are you going to be developing a guy for someone else who, by the time he reaches his prime, he's going to be a free agent and he's going to be hitting the open market? Dylan Cruz looks like he's closer. Wyatt Langford's a guy that impressed me in the College World Series as well. So I don't feel like they could go wrong if they draft an outfielder. I think the thing you weigh is, do the Pirates go, pay full slot for the number one overall pick and get the best player available? Or do they try to do the same strategy where you draft a Henry Davis type of guy, go a little bit under slot, and then turn that savings into drafting other top 100 prospects where, the guy that they drafted in the second round in 21, Anthony Solometo, a left-handed pitcher who was a high school pick, he's now a top 100 prospect. You get him and you get Bubba Chandler with the money that you saved on Davis, And I don't know, you have to weigh that. Is that worthwhile to get multiple picks and really stock up your farm system, or do you want the one guy who could be the generational talent and the real difference maker? And I think that's what the Pirates have to weigh. Everybody I talk to says to go with Cruz, but if they go with Skeens, you know, that's a position where we know the Pirates can't compete in the free agent market is for a power arm like that. And that's a guy that a lot of people feel like might be closer to the majors than any of the players involved.
Have a good weekend, Kevin. We'll do it again next week, all right?
Hey, thanks for having me, Tim.
All right, this is Kevin Gorman, covers the Pirates at the Trib, our weekly conversation about baseball right here at Trib Live and Breakfast with Benz.